Talk 580 KMJ presents Hometown Heroes, honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, where each and every week we visit with Valley veterans of World War II. Our purpose is threefold. First of all, honor the service and sacrifice of our greatest generation. Secondly, preserve those firsthand stories of history for posterity. And thirdly, to hopefully inspire my generation and the generations to follow, to follow that example that the greatest generation has set for us. This week, we will mark on Wednesday the 63rd anniversary of the first atomic bomb used as a weapon. That, of course, was dropped on Hiroshima, August 6th, 1945. We will visit with a Valley veteran who was part of the 509th Composite Group, the group from which the Enola Gay took off on Tinian on August 6th, 1945, for that fateful historic mission. The first that most Americans heard of that historic act came from the president at the time, Harry S. Truman, and this is how that sounded then.
The world will note that the first atomic bomb was dropped on Hiroshima, a military base. We won the race of discovery against the Germans. We have used it in order to shorten the agony of war, in order to save the lives of thousands and thousands of young Americans. We shall continue to use it until we completely destroy Japan's power to make war.
So that was Harry Truman, August 6th, 1945, just about 63 years ago. Our guest today is a longtime Visalia resident. Norris Jernigan served in the 509th Composite Group, has some very captivating stories to tell us about his experiences with that group and the knowledge he had about the bombs before they were dropped, and even something that a lot of people aren't familiar with, the possibility of a third bomb that might have been dropped. All that we'll get to before this edition of Hometown Heroes is over. But first of all, Mr. Jernigan, welcome to the program. Thanks for being here today. And let's start at the beginning. Every World War II veteran has that that seminal moment when they heard about World War II, or at least the start of it for Americans, the bombing of Pearl Harbor. Where were you at the time, and what do you remember about that day?
You mean about August 6th?
I mean about December 7th, 1941.
Oh, December 7th, yes. Well, I was a farm boy. We lived on a farm near Galt, California. And we'd been waiting all day for a load of cattle to arrive. We were buying some additional cattle. And when the driver arrived, he says, "Hey, have you heard the news? We've been bombed." And that was the first I'd heard of it, because we didn't have the radio on all day. When you're on the farm, you don't sit around and listen to the radio, believe me.
Well, I think if you're on a farm today, you could pick up KMJ somewhere around Galt. I'm not sure.
They probably could, yes.
This was a long time ago, though. And how old were you at the time?
Let me think. I'm 41. I was 16, I guess.
So it wouldn't be too long before you were eligible for service. Did you know pretty early on that that was something you'd end up doing, is going into the service one way or the other?
I think every young man did. We believed in the country, and we recognized that we had been attacked, and it was attractive to all the young men to get involved in the military. And as I saw a lot of my high school friends starting to disappear and going into the military, and then my older brother went into the military, that, of course, was what eventually would happen to us if the war lingered on that long.
And you ended up in the U.S. Army Air Corps.
I enlisted in the U.S. Army Air Corps, yes. I was sworn in the day before I was 18 so that I would not have to register for the draft. If I had waited one more day, I would have had to register for the draft, and I didn't want to do that. I wanted to select my own branch of service. I had originally wanted to be a pilot, so I enlisted in the Army Air Corps cadet program and went through partial training of that until they reached a point where all of the flight schools, bombardier schools, navigator schools were filled to capacity at that particular time, and so they eliminated about two-thirds of our school squadron. So out of 240 guys in our school squadron, only about a third of them made it onto a higher level of training.
You know, it's funny. I've talked to navigators, bombardiers, waist gunners, tail gunners, just about everyone that you can have on an air crew, and I've yet to meet one young man who enlisted in the Army Air Corps who didn't have some ambition of being a pilot.
Absolutely.
Did it seem that way to you?
I wanted to fly the biggest airplane that they made. At that time, it was the B-17, but of course, the B-29 came along later, which was beyond the B-17, still made by Boeing, but beautiful airplane.
Well, and you would end up spending plenty of time around B-29s by the time the war was over. Was that a disappointment to you when you didn't get to continue with the Pilots Cadet program?
Oh, absolutely. And all of us were crushed that the term they used at that time, you were being washed out, which wasn't a very nice term, but that was exactly what happened to us. We were washed out and sent in different directions to trade school. Some went to radio school, some went to mechanics. I was sent to Amarillo, Texas to become an airplane mechanic. Well, that was just one of the brilliant things that the military elected to do, because I was not mechanically inclined. So the format was to go through the mechanic training school and then go to a gunnery school, so you'd be a mechanic and a gunner on an airplane. When we arrived at Amarillo, Texas for the mechanic school, nothing was happening. We laid around there for about 4 or 5 weeks waiting. Then they finally called us out for formation and announced that the mechanic school was being closed at Amarillo, and that we would be sent on to different sites. And some of us were sent to Salt Lake City for a reassignment on what they call the on-the-job training. They were going more to that format than the trade schools at that particular time.
Throughout all that, were you ever itching to get overseas, to see some action, to be a part
absolutely.
Of a crew?
Absolutely. Yes. All of us were, you know. We wanted to get into the fight. I had a good buddy that was with me for a while when we were stationed in Fairmont, Nebraska, that he just was so impatient to get into it that he finally left our 393rd Bomb Squadron to enlist in gunnery school so he could get into the fray. He went through the gunnery school, was sent to Europe as a gunner on a B-24, and was shot down, lost over Germany.
And you also at the time obviously had your brother serving in the war.
Yes. He also enlisted to become a pilot, and when he was pretty well along in his training for, and I think he was in twin engine training at that time, his eardrum burst, whatever they call it, and that washed him out automatically. They didn't have much patience with you, you know, if you're expendable when you're in the service and you're sent where they want you to go, and so you accept it.
I imagine during this time, as you're going from one base to another, being sent to one program and then on to another and learning all these different skills, do you have time to build some camaraderie with the guys around you? Are there some friends that you made then that you've kept 60 years later?
You build the camaraderie almost immediately because you're working together, you're bunked together in the barracks. You go to the mess hall together, you know. So you do, yes. It's not easy, though, to maintain a long-term relationship with those relationships because it's such a short term. Now, when I was sent to Salt Lake City, we were only there about 3 weeks, I think, until we all went in different directions. And, for instance, I was sent to Fairmont, Nebraska to be part of a new B-29 group and was assigned to the 393rd Bomb Squadron. Some of the others, I'm not sure where they went. We just lost track of each other. One of the guys that I was traveling with also went to Fairmont, Nebraska, and he wound up in one of the other bomb squadrons of this same bomb group.
Do you remember when you first laid eyes on a B-29, and was there a wow factor for you?
Enormousness
of it?
We were sent to Fairmont, Nebraska to become a B-29 outfit, and it was a long time before they were able to get B-29s there for the crews, and they were training in B-17s. And we were part of the 504th bomb group at that time, and our squadron was a 393rd bomb squadron. And finally that first B-29 arrived, and we all dashed out to get a close-up of it, and it was immediately surrounded by MPs guarding it and with their guns drawn. Because it was still a pretty secret thing, and the B-29 was early on in its history.
Did you ever look at it and say, I'm not sure that's really going to fly?
Not really, because I saw it come in, and I thought, that's the most beautiful thing in the world.
Pretty big sucker, huh?
Yes, they were. Compared to the other, now they're dwarfed. If they taxi alongside some of these airliners, for instance, 747, they can almost go under the wing, you know. But, and the B-52, for instance, has just
absolutely
dwarfed them.
No question. Things have changed in a hurry over the last six decades.
Yes.
Norris Jernigan of Visalia is our guest today on Hometown Heroes. When we come back, we're going to learn more about his time in World War II, how he came to be a part of nuclear history, and the first atomic bomb, which was dropped just about 63 years ago this week. More Hometown Heroes when we come back on News Talk 580 KMJ.
The front line of freedom. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler on News Talk 580 KMJ.
Blue Yonder, performed there by the local Sounds of Freedom Band. I'll give you a little heads up. September 14th, Saroyan Theater, big concert with the Sounds of Freedom Band. You'll hear all those service tunes and a great collection of patriotic music. Hope I'll see you there September 14th at the Saroyan Theater in downtown Fresno for a free concert with Sounds of Freedom. And you'll be hearing more about that on KMJ between now and then. Just a sneak peek for now. And Wild Blue Yonder, very appropriate since our guest today, Norris Jernigan of Visalia, is a U.S. Army Air Corps veteran from World War II. He has a connection to the dropping of the bomb on Hiroshima. Little boy dropped from Enola Gay on Hiroshima 63 years ago this week, August 6, 1945. But long before the world learned of this atomic weapon, Norris, you and the people around you had a little inkling of this, but you didn't call it the atomic bomb at the time. What did you know this this revolutionary weapon as?
Well, we knew it was a top-secret weapon. It was a bomb that had never been used before, and so we were just referred to it as the gimmick all the time. We didn't refer to it as an atomic bomb. In fact, I never heard the phrase atomic bomb until after the bomb was dropped, because we just didn't talk about it. I'm sure some of the intelligence officers that I worked for knew the full title of the thing, but I did not until the day that it was dropped.
What was the first you heard of this? Because I imagine this is kind of a revolutionary concept, depending on how much you know. And I imagine it was a little bit here, a little bit there. But what was the first that you heard of this new weapon?
The first that I heard of this new weapon is when, let's back up just a little bit. As I said before, I was in the 393rd Bomb Squadron and part of the 504th Bomb Group at Fairmont, Nebraska. Unbeknownst to us, Colonel Paul Tibbetts was given an assignment to develop a military unit.